Each of the communities that invest in community broadband solutions is going to be slightly different, going to be about negotiating those very specific local conditions that will make the project successful.
This is episode 248 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast from the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. I'm Lisa Gonzalez. In March, we shared the news about Lancaster, Pennsylvania's public-private partnership with MA Communications on muninetworks.org. This week, Christopher interviews Patrick Hopkins, business administrator for the city, and Brian Kelly, operations director at MA Communications. In the interview, you'll hear about the long and detailed planning for the Fiber to the Home project. You'll also hear about how both the city and this local provider found some ways to overcome specific challenges relating to the project. They each explain what drew them to this approach and some of the added benefits of Fiber to the Home in Lancaster. Check out the project website at landcityconnect.com and learn about MA Communications at macom.com. Now here's Patrick Hopkins and Brian Kelly talking with Christopher about the Land City Connect project.
Welcome to another edition of the Community Broadband Bits podcast. I'm Chris Mitchell, and today I'm speaking with Patrick Hopkins, the business administrator for the City of Lancaster. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having us.
And we also have Brian Kelly, the operations director at MA Communications, a small private company that serves the region. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having us.
So, Patrick, I thought I'd ask you first to just give us a short version of what's happening in Lancaster with this arrangement.
Sure. Well, we're excited to finally, I'll say, and I'm sure we'll get into some of the history on this, but working with MA Communications on a community fiber broadband system called Land City Connect. We're actually beginning the rollout of residential connections, fiber to the home connections, beginning, I believe, at the beginning of May. Those are being scheduled right now. We've been undergoing a beta testing program since about early November, I believe it is, with about 60 customers. We've gotten Land City Connect has gotten great feedback from those customers, and we're excited to get this thing rolling.
Wonderful. And Brian, do you have anything to add in terms of a short overview of what we're going to be talking about here?
No, I think Patrick summed it up. It's a really exciting time with the launch of Land City Connect, and the kind of possibilities and the buzz that's happening locally around this has been really encouraging, as folks are really interested in being part of a local broadband solution.
I want to paint a little picture for our listeners that haven't been out there. As I told you, Patrick, I played my first soccer tournament in Lancaster growing up in the Lehigh Valley. So, but for people who haven't been there, what's Lancaster like?
The city of Lancaster, we've got a population of about 60,000, very compact. We're officially about 7.4 square miles. So 60,000 people in that small area, but actually most, probably 95% of the residents are within about a 4-square-mile area. Nice, compact, very urban city, just in terms of about 90% of our homes are row homes or just barely disconnected homes. We'll probably talk about it later, but it's a real advantage when we're talking about rolling out fiber backbone across the city. But we're about 75 miles west of Philadelphia. Lancaster County itself has a population of about 530,000. So the city is about 10% of the total population of the county. We're surrounded by, I guess, a metro area of about probably 150,000-175,000. But the city itself is 60,000 people.
And aside from MA, you have, I presume, a cable and DSL service?
Yes, we do.
Okay. I always like to establish that because sometimes people assume communities that are engaging in either their own investment or partnerships have nothing, but you already have something. You're looking for something better, I would guess.
Yes, that is correct.
And let's turn to Brian and learn a little bit about what's MA's background?
So MA Communications is in its 19th year of business. We're a registered Pennsylvania public utility here in the state of Pennsylvania. And for most of the beginning of our existence, we focused on larger institutional clients, governmental, healthcare, education, larger enterprises with multiple locations that needed to be connected. And so this emerging partnership with the city is an expansion of that core broadband service and looking at the expansion to residential services.
So is serving a lot of homes and even smaller businesses something that's kind of new for you then?
Yeah, for Mall Communications, that's part of what the whole partnership with the City of Lancaster has been, is actually scaling up that component of the partnership.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how that partnership began. Patrick, can you give us a little bit of background?
We've been talking with Mall Communications for probably about 10 years. I think probably our first conversation with Frank Wiskowski, who's the president of Mall Communications, dates back to sometime in 2006 or early 2007. So we've had sort of on and off again conversations about sort of various fiber possibilities. Anything from providing public Wi-Fi in public spaces and public parks, and then sort of over a period of years, as the city got some things in order, both financially and operationally, more recently those conversations turned to doing a fiber broadband throughout the city. And really what we're doing is leveraging some investment that we needed to make anyway in an automatic meter reading system. We also we provide water services to the City of Lancaster and the surrounding suburban areas. So we had some other investment that we were looking to do in terms of interconnection of traffic signals and this automatic meter reading system. That conversation sort of continued to grow into what's now, you know, the creation of Land City Connect as sort of a bit of an offshoot of some of this other fiber infrastructure that we talked about.
And Brian, I would love to hear, you know, if there's any other details about the working together with the city, how it came to be that you'd like to contribute.
Yeah, I mean, the partnership has been going well, and as Patrick mentioned, it's really been evolving over time. One of the things that is really nice about this is that there's multiple needs that are being met through this. And so then that's one of the things Mall really likes to pride itself on, is kind of looking at, oh, so we're looking at the automated meter infrastructure. We're looking at traffic signals. We're looking at potentially Wi-Fi hotspots. All of this integration, and then looking at, oh, well, once we're already investing there, there's really only marginal additional cost in connecting residents. So how can we get the most bang for our buck, if you will, in this infrastructure investment? So we've been really pleased with being able to work with the city and helping to develop this.
Brian, I'm curious if you can just say a few words about what it's like to be working with the city, you know, perhaps pros and cons. You know, I'm sure that no one's going to pretend it's anything is all easy. But the reason I ask is a lot of telecommunications carriers, the larger ones especially, some of the smaller ones, are reluctant or prefer not to work with cities. And I'm just curious if you can tell us why you thought it would be a good idea to, and how that's sort of working out.
Yeah, it's definitely, there's definitely pros and cons to that type of relationship. And I think one of Ma's reasons for entering into an arrangement like this is more of our ethic, which is we're not interested in being what we consider a jack, just another carrier. We are kind of interested in what is the innovation in this industry and what is the added value to the communities in which we operate. So we're based in Pennsylvania. We're going to be on specifically in southeastern Pennsylvania, and our focus is on trying to make sure that we have as much added value as possible. And so working with the city to solve its multiple dilemmas is an engineer's dream. We like to consider ourselves problem solvers. The problem that we're solving is often figuring out how to get data moving from one point to another, but a much bigger way, especially in the information age. We're excited about this process of how that is really moving society forward. In terms of working with cities, I think one of the really great ways that I've seen that the City of Lancaster, they're actually together as a unit moving something forward. So I've worked in a couple of other cities outside of my relationship with MAW, and oftentimes with municipalities, you can see a lot of discord internally and kind of competing policy objectives. So one thing that's been nice about the partnership with the City of Lancaster is they've been very clear about some of their basic ethics and policy principles in how we're rolling out Land City and what they wanted to achieve. And that's been really refreshing on our end. I think some of the difficulties is because it's a larger bureaucracy and those tend to be slower to change, then sometimes we want to move faster than a bureaucracy is ready to move, or as we dig a little bit deeper, that means that the exact output is going to change over time. So that's one of the kind of pluses and minuses, is this evolving project.
That strikes a chord with what I've seen both from providers and cities. And Patrick, I'm curious if you can perhaps comment on two aspects of that. The first is having a comprehensive vision and sense of where you want to go. And the second would be, once you've had it, communicating it and sticking to it. Can you tell us anything about how the cities accomplish this?
Neither of them have come about easily, that's for sure. I think part of the thing that we benefit from is that Mayor Gray, who's our current mayor, has been in office since 2006, and really we did start these conversations with Maul not too long after he took office. I came in at the same time. Our public works director had actually been with the city of Lancaster earlier. The mayor's chief of staff came in when Mayor Gray came into office. And over that time, as I described the relationship that we built with Maul over time, we also saw some of the things that Brian saw in terms of some of the new opportunities that we had, new challenges that we had to try to tie together. We've got multiple locations in the city, City of Lancaster locations in the city. We've got traffic signals all over the place. We have about 110 miles of city streets, so we have a lot of signalized intersections. We have a county government that's whose main operation is about three blocks away from us, and we actually have a shared services agreement with them for file serving, and we have some of our ERP system is actually located there. So we have some interconnection with the county government that's also part of this. So over that 10 to 12 year period, it's been an evolving project, and sort of breaking down some of the silos that existed when the mayor came into office in 2006. That's frankly part of why this has taken so long. And then sort of the community outreach part has been much more recent. The sort of external part of this project has been much more recent. But we've been able to keep our city council apprised sort of all the way through the project, try to provide as much transparency in the project itself to city council, and to the extent possible also to the public. We've sort of built up the momentum for what has ultimately become Land City Connect. But even that, the term Land City Connect, I think is what, Brian, about 9 months old, something like that. Months out
right
of
about.
You know, a 10-year project.
Since we were just touching on some of the benefits that are coming from this, I'm wondering if you can share some of the cost savings that you've already seen and are expecting from this. And also, I would just wonder, I mean, how much of this would come from not just the presence of fiber that you have access to, but also from the engineering benefits that you're getting from working with Maul?
You know, obviously, we have our own internet services right now that we would have a savings. I think we're talking in total among a couple of different buildings, about $35,000 or $40,000 a year. That's sort of an easy one to sort of put a number to. The more complicated stuff to put a number to is things like the interconnection of our traffic signal system. You know, we have some interconnect with those with that traffic signal system now, but not nearly the benefit that we'll have out of the fiber interconnection. So there's not necessarily a direct cost savings that I can say we're going to reduce cost by X, but we know that we'll be able to operate more efficiently, provide better service to, you know, folks who are driving through the city, and there's a lot of them. On the AMR system, the automatic meter reading system, right now, we read our water meters for residential properties once every 3 months. With this AMR system and the speed and reliability that we'll have out of the fiber interconnection, we'll be able to read meters literally like 10 or 15 times a day if we need to, which means that we can provide better service to customers because we can detect leaks at their property that they might not even know about. So some of this is a dollar savings, but also a lot of it is really just an improvement in services that we're going to be able to provide. So to the extent that, you know, not necessarily saves the city government a lot of money, but it can save residents an awful lot of money and heartache. The other piece of this is that we have, unlike a lot of municipalities, we have a camera system that's operated by a nonprofit organization that operates in the city. They have about 165 security cameras throughout the city. Part of this project has been helping to upgrade the fiber infrastructure that they have so that ultimately we can flip those cameras over to operating off of the fiber backbone that's been installed by Mall. And that's, you know, before we even get into the Land City Connect services. So, you know, we expect with the internet service savings, some of the staff savings that we'll have from the AMR system and others, that we're going to see, you know, annual savings of probably $150,000 to $200,000 a year. And again, that doesn't count some of these other sort of operational savings and efficiencies that we're going to gain.
Brian, do you have anything to add to that?
I think the other part of your question, though, was around the engineering component. And I think that from Ma's perspective, I think that's one of the kind of been the most fascinating part of this is we're systems integrators in a way. And so all of these different things that Patrick just talked about could all be analyzed separately. And there could be some solutions for improving, reducing costs or improving the operations. But then once we started integrating them all into one comprehensive system and looking at distributing information through a passive optical network, then it opened up new possibilities around that. So I think that was one of the kind of exciting things about working on this project with the city, was getting to lump all of these together and see, could we actually create a scaled solution?
So I think with a little bit of the time we have left, I would like to just get a sense of the fiber to the home plan. How is it working? Let's just start with Patrick and just give us a thumbnail sketch of the moving parts, please.
In about, I believe, the beginning of November or so, began the Land City Connect beta program, which was a connection of about 55 or 60 residential properties throughout the city. Part of it was just a proof of concept to make sure that the network speeds, the traffic, and everything was operating the way that Mall designed it. And they, you know, ran into some hiccups along the way and some corrections that needed to be made. With each of the residents who have been connected to through the beta program, they've done surveys throughout. So I think somewhere in the neighborhood of probably 10 to a dozen surveys along the way for folks to test their wired speeds, their wireless speeds, and a number of other things, you know, throughout, including the customer service level of the folks who came out to make the fiber to the home connection to the exterior of the property, folks who came inside the property to get the fiber inside, connect the modem, and get the router and everything set up. So, you know, and through that process, everybody has learned some things, and part of that was not just figuring out the networking piece and making sure that the speeds that everybody expected to be there were there, but also how best to do the installations. We've got, as I described earlier, a very compact city. We've got a lot of row homes. It makes the sort of bang for the buck in terms of, a mile of fiber goes a long way in the city of Lancaster to connect to a lot of properties. But it's also not the easiest thing in the world to work around sort of row home properties and figuring out which is the best way to get into the property with the fiber. So, you know, there are a lot of lessons learned throughout the last 4 months, I guess. And now we're at the point where Mall is scheduling, Land City Connect is scheduling the first phase of the residential connections in two areas of the city. We've got to sort of phase this project along. The timing of the phases is really based on, you know, the capability that will be there with Land City Connect installation crews to sort of roll this out throughout the city. We would love to have lit up everybody at the same time, but as you're running fiber connections to several thousand properties, that just wasn't the case. So we have some folks who have been chomping at the bit for, well, I'd say a couple of years, really, since we first announced this project. They're all ready to go, and they're in phase one. Other folks are going to have to wait a little while. But I think as this starts to roll out and we get some word of mouth on the street for people who have been connected with Land City Connect, that the momentum of this will keep on growing.
Well, I have no doubt, because when I look at the pricing sheet, you're looking at $35 a month for 50 megabits, $50 a month for 150 megabits. It's pretty remarkable pricing. Brian, I guess, you know, as we're talking about money, one of the things I'm curious about is the cost of building a network like this. You're getting a loan from the city that you'll be paying back over a period of time with revenue from the network. But I presume that you also have to bring in some of your own money as part of that.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, we already have kind of several hundred thousand dollars invested in the scaling up here. And I mean, you bring up an interesting point, which is that the economics of residential fiber to the home installations it's not super promising. There's not a whole lot of people kind of diving in because of the profit margins that can be made in that particular industry. One of the ways that this was made cost effective was because of the investment that the city was already making in a substantial amount of the fiber, and then we were able to kind of work off of that core backbone. So that was a critical element in the success of this rollout. I think one of the other things, as Patrick mentioned, we're launching at a pretty aggressive rate, and so we're hoping to sign up about 3,000 customers over the next 18 months, which is, we consider, ambitious, but definitely achievable. So we had a lot of folks who wanted to sign up, like Patrick said. We asked folks, well, what day would you like? They said, well, the first day of installation at 8 a.m. Everybody wants to be the first in the city to be connected. We were like, there's over 50 requests for that same day. We're like, well, that's not possible, but we are going to be lighting them up.
That's a problem of physics that even Maul can't overcome.
Exactly.
And so I just wanted to note, we have an article on the website that we entitled Public-Private Partnership Pursued in Pennsylvania. So if anyone wants to put a bunch of P's into Google or go to the...
I liked the alliteration. That was nice.
But we have more of the details about the financing spelled out there. But I wanted to end with a question just in terms of how both of you are seeing it. Now, from the perspective of my organization, we're always concerned in public-private partnerships where we might see a situation in which the public gets invested and then the partner ends up changing hands, being purchased by a larger company, or, you know, somehow not maintaining that original great service that was promised. And I'm just curious if maybe, Brian, you can start and give me a sense of why we should, why another community that might be looking at this model should trust Maw. And then we'll turn to Patrick, I think, to just get a perspective of how you're thinking about this risk.
Sure. So for other communities outside of Pennsylvania, they can make the decision to trust Maw or not, but we won't really be partnering with them. So we'll be staying in Pennsylvania. So anyone who's in Pennsylvania and wants to contact Maw, that's a different story. Part of it is our company ethics, right? So the city was very clear in some of its initial policy priorities, making sure that as we continued to grow, we were going to be doing local contracting with firms in Lancaster. And then also, as we scaled up, creating full-time living wage jobs for residents in the city of Lancaster. So that's all kind of like part of their ethic and something that we consider as a local company, something that's important to us as well. So any economy is based on the interaction of all of the of those local actors. And so that was a really important piece. And then and Patrick and the city of Lancaster, in doing their due diligence, was making sure that, asking those exact questions that you asked, how do we know that we can trust Ma? Even though these guys seem like nice guys, let's make sure in these agreements that nothing can happen. And so then there's a lot of language in the loan agreements and then also in the public-private partnership that gives the city that leverage of making sure that Maw can actually kind of turn around and walk away from the city and say, oh, that was nice, bye. We're looking at it as kind of this long-term partnership that's being developed. But I think that especially for anyone listening to this podcast, especially folks on the municipal side of things, those are really important questions to ask. Where is this company going? Are they just starting up? Is this a 1 or 2 year company? In which case, you really want to kind of do some serious vetting about capacity and their ability to stick around. In our case, we've been around for 18 years. We were able to kind of consistently show and deliver to the city on various milestones, which is where they kind of develop that confidence over time. And as Patrick said, this is a process in the making. So it wasn't that one day they said, oh, let's do this. Oh, Ma, that's a nice shiny organization. Let's partner. They were, you know, over the course of the last few years, we were consistently developing that relationship and kind of seeing how this would develop.
Yeah, I think Brian covered that really well. I mean, we operate under the adage of trust but verify. So as Brian said, we've had, you know, over that period of years, built up a relationship, understood, you know, the capabilities that Ma had on the technical side and the engineering side of all this. Frankly, it sort of comes down to getting language and agreements that, for instance, the first agreement that we had with Ma essentially has a clause that says that if any of the infrastructure that we build in this partnership, if Ma were to be sold, the services that we built with that infrastructure, this agreement carries forward to the buyer of Ma. So, you know, we had to build in protections there because, you know, anything can happen at any point in time. So we had to make sure that our attorneys reviewed. We had attorneys, not just our city solicitor, but folks who were involved on the telecommunications law, review all of the agreements to make sure that we had, you know, we had protections in there for the city, because for the city itself and our taxpayers, we're making a significant investment in this infrastructure. So we want to make sure that we're not going to be sitting here 5 years down the road or 8 years down the road and having made all that infrastructure investment and then be stuck with a system that is operated by somebody that we don't have a good relationship with. So, and then we get to the loan documentation side, or providing the operating capital loan to Ma to sort of ramp up the Land City Connect operation made sense to us, because the collateral that we have on that loan is the fiber infrastructure itself. So we sort of have things locked down so that at any point in this whole operation, let's say if for whatever reason, something, you know, happens that the operation is not successful, there's a loan that we've made to Mall, but the city of Lancaster has the fiber infrastructure as collateral. So, you know, we've got a good trusting relationship that we've built over a period of years, but we think we also have the good legal documentation to back that relationship up.
Great. Well, is there anything that either one of you would like to add as we just conclude the show?
Come back and check us out 6 months or 12 months down the road and see how we're doing. We hope that we've got 1,000 or more residential connections made and that more of our residents see the benefit of this infrastructure investment.
And Brian?
Kind of one suggestion, especially for other communities that might be thinking about this, is that each of the communities that invest in community broadband solutions is going to be slightly different. So I would just encourage folks to kind of stay open to possibilities and not think that you can just grab a model from elsewhere and put it, wholesale in your own community. It's going to be about negotiating those very specific local conditions that will make the project successful.
Right. Yeah, I would wholly endorse those comments. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for taking all the time today to speak with us.
Sure. Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for having us.
And I look forward to talking to you in maybe a year's time, maybe on Ma Fiber itself. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
That was Christopher talking with Patrick Hopkins, Business Administrator for the City of Lancaster, and Brian Kelly, Operations Director at Ma Communications.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to thank you for listening and helping out to create a stronger internet ecosystem, making sure everyone has high quality access. Please tell your friends, tell others who might be interested about this show. If you have a chance to rate us on iTunes, please do. Several people already have. We really appreciate all of the comments, and we really appreciate you taking the time to listen to us.
We have transcripts for this and other Community Broadband Bits podcasts available at muninetworks.org/broadbandbits. Send us your ideas for the show. Shoot us a note at podcast@muninetworks.org. Follow Chris on Twitter. His handle is @communitynets. You can also follow muninetworks.org stories on Twitter, where the handle is @muninetworks. Subscribe to this podcast and all of the podcasts in the ILSR family on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever else you get your podcasts. We want to thank Break the Bands for the song Escape, licensed through Creative Commons, and we want to thank you for listening to episode 248 of the Community Broadband Bits podcast.